Open three for Eilert from the left wing. Nothing but the bottom for Quinn Eilert. The first three of the game comes from Quinn, and boy, it's up 5-0. Brings it out across half court, back out top to Cheney. And it's a dunk and a stuff for Beisner on the hoop. Bryce Beisner stuffs it home, and it's 19-4 out of the second quarter. Feeding inside to Beisner, into the corner for Johnson. Eli for three, and he buries it from the far corner. Eli Johnson with his first triple this season, and Beloit's up 20-28. Gerstner head fakes on a three at the volleyball spike line. He'll line it up right wing this time. Book it again. Noah Gerstner with his 100th triple of his career. And Beloit leads by 30, 41-11. A milestone for Gerstner.
Some of the highlights from last night's standalone high school basketball game. Beloit hosting Riley County, and the girls' game was, the first half was not exactly great for people to watch basketball for both teams. It was not lighting the world on fire. There's no other way to describe that when it's 15-6 at halftime. Second half was better, and a tight, close game that came down to the final shot. The boys' game was never in doubt. Beloit's blowing out everybody at home. There are road games against better competition have been very tight, and they've won all those. Beloit boys are 7-0 on the season, ranked second in 3A, and the Beloit girls, their three-game winning streak comes to an end, so I'll let Dusty recap last night. Welcome to Sports Ticket, brought to you by Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit, your home for fast-friendly auto repair. We'll preview KU's game against Yale tonight, K-State and Wichita State battling out yesterday. A former Chief was very prominent in the win for the Rams last night. We'll preview the Chiefs and the Raiders. The Dodgers keep spending away. Major League Baseball has made some rule changes for next season. NBA team closing in on dubious history. A college football team and university trying to leave a conference. And more coming up on the ticket in just a little bit. But first, Dusty recaps last night.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting to be doing a game and not have to look around for scores of other games last night with just one game on the docket. Again, the Beloit Trojans splitting with Riley County. As Wade said, that girls' contest was 15-6 at halftime. Riley County actually scored the first 8 points in the game. Beloit had it down to 8-4 by the end of the first quarter. And then Riley County had 1 point, 15-4 lead. Again, they led 15-6 at half. Beloit, though, trailing by 9 there in the, or 11 actually, in the third quarter, got within 4 by the end of the third on a 7-0 run there to make it 21-17. But Riley County would stretch that lead back out to 9 at 31-22. But they were not able to finish the game at the free throw line. They missed their first 9 free throws of the fourth quarter, and Beloit was able to get some buckets and get right back into it. Cass Thompson made a bucket under 10 seconds left to put Beloit within 1 there. And with 8 seconds, they did get a foul. Riley County finally made 1 free throw as Taryn Shepard knocked down a free throw to give them a 32-30 lead. And then coming back down the other way for Beloit, there was a chance there. The ball got knocked loose in the middle of the lane, and then Peyton Remus went over to the left wing to grab it. Had a chance at a game-winning three that was open, but she did have to rush it and was not able to knock down the three. It went off the back and missed, but Beloit definitely fought hard. They never led in the game, but they made it a challenge for Riley County as Beloit now is 4-3, seeing their three-game winning streak come to a close. Riley County moving 2-4-2, picking up their third win in a row. Taryn Shepard, that we mentioned, made the free throw there late. She hit the first two threes for Riley County and finished with 12 points as a co-athlete of the game from SNS Drug and Home Health and Beloit. And Addison Budke had 12 points as well, 6 of them coming in the fourth quarter, was a co-athlete of the game. Our block of the game went to Budke as well. The connection of the game was a three-pointer from Peyton Remus there in the fourth quarter. And the utility player of the game from Syncon of Kansas was Ashlyn Knight for the Beloit Lady Trojans. Again, in the boys' contest, Beloit never trailed in this one. They were out real early. A couple threes from Quinn Eilert early in the game, and Beloit ended up making 9 on the night. They led 30-8 after the first half, and then Lance Lundin got in the action and made a three right before the end of the third quarter to make it 46-13. So that's the way the night went, and Beloit won 59-21. Eli Johnson, you heard in the intro there of the show, did make his first three of the season, had a career high 16 points on unofficially 7 of 12 shooting. He was our athlete of the game from SNS Drug and Home Health in Beloit. The connection of the game, Cunningham Telephone and Cable. We did co-connections. Gerstner with his 103 connecting from deep, 103 in his career, and then the assist from Jackson Cheney to Bryce Beisner on the alley-oop. Also a connection of the game, Cunningham Telephone and Cable. Our block of the game from HR Block and Beloit went to Quinn Eilert, and the utility player of the game was Joel Rexroth, who got his first varsity points of his career last night and had 7 for Beloit in the win. And a lot of different guys contributed. As Wade said, Beloit's now 7-0, and Riley County is 1-5 going into the break. So, again, a split last night. The Beloit boys winning 59-21, and the girls losing just by 2, 32-30 on Thursday night.
Yeah, the girls game, really the difference to me was Raleigh County made three-pointers and outside shots, yeah. And Beloit didn't.
Yeah.
Because they packed in that zone. Beloit's going to see a ton of zone, yeah, they're and they're going to have to make some shots.
Absolutely.
And everybody knows it. I mean, trust me, everybody knows it. They're going to really have to make some shots so that Thompson and Budke have some room to operate inside. And then Riley County missing 9 free throws in a row. I mean, yeah, Riley, Blake had a chance at the end. Yes, they kept fighting, but also they were helped out by that many missed free throws because Riley doesn't usually do that. So, but close game there, and Blake girls still 4-3 on the season. Already matched their win total from a year ago.
Ryan Eilert always talks about free throw shooting's contagious, right? And I don't know if I've always believed that, but I really did believe that last night for sure, because it's like the first two miss, and then the next two miss, and then the next it was four different players at the line, and then, you know, you're missing and missing, and it's just like it's in your head now because everybody else missed, and now I've got to try to make one, and then hitting them off the back iron. And there were multiple of them that weren't particularly close at all either.
I think shooting's contagious no matter what. I think it's contagious if you are making a couple threes go down and everybody starts making threes. I think if you start missing free throws, everybody starts missing free throws for the most part. Now, if you're a great free throw shooter, it shouldn't matter.
Yeah.
And I do think that when you get all of a sudden, when you miss multiple shots in a row or you miss a few layups in a row, that gets in your head as well. I think there's something to that all the way across the board. It is, I think, a little bit contagious.
Yeah, it spreads around, and it certainly did with the Riley County girls last night.
Yeah, it definitely did. Yeah, and the boys had a couple alley-oops and a great dunk. That's the best alley-oop I've seen Beloit run this in there with Bryce Bison. I was as high as I seen Bryce go. It was probably the best pass I've seen on the alley-oop. They've run that multiple times. Bryce has had a handful of dunks in his career off of it, and it was pretty impressive. And then Kyler Burks was there after the game, and lots of picture taken, and had a chance to talk to Kyler a little bit. And so the seniors posed in front of their pictures, and there's Kyler. Kyler's picture and Kyler there it's wheelchair, but yet it's also a different, there's probably a different name for it, but Kyler's still, you know, fighting back after that horrible vehicle accident a few years ago. So it was good to see him and his mom there and grandma at the game last night as well. So that wraps up the first part of the winter sports season, and then you'll have 3 games and 4 days right off the bat, first week of January. So we're going to let Dusty
be an overachiever.
We're going to let Dusty, you know, have some time off next week and then just really stick it to him as soon as he comes back. So we got games on January 2nd, 4th, Dusty will have, and then I'll get back into it on the 5th. And Beloit won't have a home game again until January 23rd.
Yeah.
So fire the athletic director. Pretty poor scheduling. I'm kidding. That's a joke. All right, K-State and Wichita State last night, and K-State comes away with the victory at T-Mobile Center in Kansas City.
Perry, give it to him! Tyler Perry coming alive in the second half!
Tyler Perry with 17. K-State wins 69-60 over Wichita State. Cam Carter with 15. David Gascon with 13. Arthur Kaluma with 11. Quincy Ballard led the Shockers with 13. K-State 9-3, and Wichita State falls to 8-4. Tonight, men's basketball, number 2, Kansas, 10-1 on the season. Host Yale, who's 7-5 at Allen Fieldhouse. 7 o'clock tip, pregame at 6:30 on Z96.3 The Lake. And Bill Self on the matchup against Yale here this evening in Lawrence.
I think they're very well coached. You know, I think James is a terrific coach. You know, they're picked to win the IB, if I'm not mistaken. They've got guys that can shoot the basketball. They got a 7-foot center that's 12 to 25 from 3 for the year and can score pass like Hunter. And I'm not exaggerating. I mean, he's good. And they got guards that can shoot it. You know, a pretty bright team, too. Pretty smart.
So KU in action tonight against Yale. The only thing you worry about there is if some of the kids, the players are like, all right, I'm going to go see family and I'm looking forward to eating and relaxing, and then you overlook Yale. KU-Yale tonight at Allen Fieldhouse, pregame at 6:30, tip-off at 7. KU football team will play in the Guaranteed Rate Bowl against UNLV on Tuesday, the day after Christmas. 8 o'clock kickoff, 7:30 pregame on Z96.3 Lake, your home for the Jayhawks, North Central Kansas. K-State will be in action next Thursday. Avery Johnson will be your quarterback, and maybe the only quarterback on the roster. Who knows? Pop-Tarts Bowl against NC State. The winner gets a lifetime supply of Pop-Tarts, I've been told. So
I would hope they get a bunch of them anyway.
Well, yeah.
They better get to choose which flavor they want, wouldn't they?
Well, that's important. You don't want a lifetime supply of a flavor you don't like. Tonight, a Big 12 team takes the field when Central Florida faces Georgia Tech in the Gasparilla Bowl at 5:30 on ESPN. We return in 30 seconds. We turn our attention to the National Football League, a former Chief making an impact for a team that could very well make the playoffs, and how a fifth-round rookie is setting the league on fire.
I'm Elijah at Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit. When your vehicle has a problem or needs maintenance, Kiever Brothers is your home for fast, friendly auto repair. Whether you need tires, brakes, batteries, belts, hoses, air conditioning, a transmission, engine, or just an oil change, there's only one thing you need to remember. We fix everything. Kiever Brothers Automotive delivers fast, friendly auto repair, and we fix everything. Find us just south of the courthouse in Beloit and online at KieferBrothers.com.
Has a snap, sets the laces, progresses, back of the end zone, leaping catch, caught, touchdown! DeMarcus Robinson for the fourth game in a row! A career best streak for D-Rob, and with 21 seconds left in the half, Stafford hits Robinson for six!
Rams are up 17-7 at half. They were up 30-7, then held on the win. Saints get it to 30-22 with under 4 minutes left. Rams are 8-7 with the win, and the Saints drop to 7-8, just a half game out in the NFC South, pending the result of the weekend for the Buccaneers, who are 7-7. And Puka Nacua was a fifth-round rookie wide receiver draft pick. The Chiefs could have had this guy. As could have every team in the league four times over. He was a fifth-round pick. This year, he has 95 catches for 1,327 yards, five touchdowns. He needs 129 yards in the final two games to break Jamar Chase's rookie record for yards, which that should happen. He needs just 11 catches to break Jalen Waddle's rookie record for receptions, which is 104. He has 95. So actually, he only needs 10 to break the record. That is pretty impressive for a fifth-round rookie. I'd say the Rams hit the jackpot with that draft pick, kind of like the Patriots hit the lottery when they got the sixth round pick in Tom Brady. And the Chiefs have had some decent late round draft picks as well. Seventh round pick Isaiah Pacheco has been pretty decent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a hit for sure right now.
No doubt.
So, I'm glad DeMarcus Robinson learned how to run forward, by the way.
Well, you know, if you catch the ball in the end zone, it's already a touchdown. So then even if you go backwards, you've already crossed the plane. So I'm not sure if that even happens. If he catches touchdowns, he's in the end zone, then you don't have to worry about that part. Why didn't the Chiefs figure that out? Just throw it to him in the end zone. Of course, he has to get open. The Chiefs atop the AFC West standings at 9-5. The Raiders 6-8. Chiefs will be playing on Christmas Day on Z96.3 Lake. Pregame 11 o'clock, kickoff at noon. Chiefs back in week 12 are down 14-0 in Vegas and then ended up winning 31-17. Andy Reid on the rematch versus the Raiders.
For the challenge of playing the Raiders, they're playing good football. Antonio has done a real nice job with that group, and they're playing hard. They've got a good scheme offensively and defensively, and special teams for that matter. The main thing is getting ready, and you know that they're still alive. I mean, so and then it's the Raiders versus the Chiefs, so you just got to get ready.
Isaiah Pacheco, after minor shoulder surgery, is expected to play this week or Monday against the Raiders. It'll be a weird Monday game at noon, but it is on Christmas Day. Mecole Hardman is expected to be back perhaps for the next game, not Monday against the Raiders, but the next game against the Bengals. And a lot of people are hoping that Kadarius Toney just catches the flu and does not. Wait a minute. It would mean he caught something. That can't be possible. Anyway, if he can't catch anything, can he catch the flu?
I don't know.
Anyway, he had a little hip issue. He didn't practice yesterday, and I think all the Chiefs fans are like, please make it be a little bit, you know, don't wish horrible things on people, but let that hip condition just linger a little bit. So Hardman may be back in a couple of games. Pacheco looks like he'll be back. The Chiefs are 9-5 and have a chance to, in essence, wrap up the AFC West with a win on Monday on Christmas Day. Broncos are two games back. Raiders do have something to play for. You know, I don't want to spend much time on the Chiefs-Raider game because it's not till Monday. And at the same time, you know, the Raiders do have something to play for. The Chiefs, you know, I think it's now is where you want to start to see them kick it in a little bit, play better consistently offensively, cut down the penalties, cut down the turnovers, and maybe the receivers just go again. It'd be fascinating if the Chiefs could go one full game without dropping a football. That would be amazing. In fact, I would take two drops instead of four or five, and that would be amazing. So A lot of focus will be on the Chiefs wide receivers yet again. Be interested to see how Andy, how much he uses Pacheco. Clyde Edwards-Helaire played well the last game. And I think the biggest thing, too, for the Chiefs moving forward is stay healthy. Just stay healthy. Don't have any key injuries to various players as you go down the stretch. The Chiefs more than likely are going to win the AFC West for the eighth straight year. They're going to be at home in the first round of the playoffs. It could be as high as maybe a two seed. Maybe they can get the one seed if everything fell right. But when I look at it here, I think, you know, it's not about the Raiders. It's about the Chiefs and themselves, like it usually is.
Always. Yeah, and especially in these, I think in these division matchups, that gets kind of magnified, right? If they're winning most of these division games, and it seems like if they ever lose one, it's like, yeah, the Chiefs beat themselves 100% in that game. And that's not just the division, but it seems like, some of those games, specifically against the Chargers more often than not, but you do want to come out and be focused in this game. And obviously, if they have things go wrong, it's not hard to predict early that it's going to be because of themselves.
The Raiders don't have a very good chance of making the playoffs. They're mathematically still alive. Of course, so are the Chargers. But the Raiders are 6-8. They need a lot of things to go right. But if they would win out, they'd at least give themselves a chance. But they can't afford to lose. So this is a must-win for the Raiders. Unlike NBA Today on ESPN saying, is the Lakers game against the Bulls tonight a must-win? And they played 27 of 80-some games. It's one of the dumbest things I've ever seen in my life. There is no must-win. There's no must-win unless your season is on the line. That's the must-win, people. That's the must-win. That is the must-win. The Raiders' season is on the line. They must win. They're not going to make the playoffs with a losing record. In fact, I don't even know if they'll make the playoffs if they won the next three. So maybe it's not even a must-win. They're already out. But technically, they're not. So you have to say it's a must-win for the Raiders. You look at the rest of the NFL schedule for this week. You've got some Saturday games again coming up tomorrow. The Bengals and the Steelers. Boy, that's a huge game, isn't it? That's at 3:30 on NBC. The Bills-Chargers. You have to be able to have Peacock or you're not going to get to watch it. It's not going to be on ESPN or, excuse me, NBC. It'll be on Peacock. So no commercials the fourth quarter.
There we go.
So Bills at Chargers. This would be the game the Bills would lose, wouldn't it? Yeah. Bills at the Chargers. And then Sunday, you got the Colts at the Falcons. I mean, there's only a few teams have been eliminated. In fact, there's only six NFL teams have been eliminated from the playoff picture with 3 weeks to go. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
I mean, that's great for the league. It's called parity.
Yeah, and that extra game that you add, people kind of forget that actually adds another a data point, is what you would call it in college football with the playoff. But it adds an extra layer to that, to where you are alive a little bit longer, too.
The only teams eliminated, Patriots, Jets, Titans, Panthers, Cardinals, Commanders. Everybody else still technically alive. Even the Bears and the Giants are not eliminated yet, believe it or not.
NFC, the bottom of the NFC playoff race is not great.
No. Okay, so there's some huge games coming up on Sunday. The Colts 8-6 at the Falcons 6-8. That's, you got to feel like it's a must win for both teams. The Packers are at the Panthers. Packers 6-8. That's probably a must win. You can't lose to the Panthers. The Browns at, except if you're the Falcons, you did last week. The Browns are at the Texans. Don't know about C.J. Stroud's status. That's a gigantic game for both teams, in particular the Texans. The Lions are at the Vikings. If the Lions would win that one, they'd wrap up their division. The Commanders are at the Jets. The Seahawks are at the Titans. Seahawks are right on the edge of making the NFC playoffs. The Jaguars are at the Buccaneers. Huge game for both those teams. Jaguars 8-6. Sounds like Trevor Lawrence may not play. Buccaneers are 7-7. Baker Mayfield played great last week. Cardinals at the Bears. The Cowboys are at the Dolphins. Both teams 10-4. What's going to happen in that game? The Cowboys don't beat anybody good on the road. In fact, they get blown out. They're on the road. The Dolphins haven't beat a team with a winning record yet this year. Will it end in a tie?
It's December too for those teams, and usually this is the time of year where they're tailing off a little bit. So somebody's got to win the game.
If there was a team,
well, I guess they don't have to.
If there was a, you don't. It can be a tie. If there is a team in each conference that you look at and say, wow, they've got a lot of talent and they should make a deep run, but you just simply have no idea because how inconsistent they are, wouldn't these two be
the
poster children?
Absolutely.
They would be the poster children of each conference. the Dolphins look great and put up 70 in a game, and they look amazing, and then they can't beat anybody worth a darn. The Cowboys, you know, have one really great win against the Eagles at home, and then they absolutely just lay a big fat egg in Buffalo, and the Cowboys are blown out in San Francisco. So you just don't know exactly what the Cowboys are made of. If you're a Chiefs fan, you're cheering for the Cowboys to beat the Dolphins. If you're a Bills fan, you're cheering for the Cowboys to beat the Dolphins. Tyreek Hill, don't know what his status will be coming up for Sunday because he missed the last game, so his chance to get in 2,000 yards are becoming slimmer. Mm-hmm. That's why it's so hard to get to these records. You got health's got to go your way. Interesting game at 3:25 on Sunday afternoon. Cowboys at the Dolphins, both teams 10-4. Patriots are 3-11 at the Broncos, 7-7. That's NFL Network. I saw their promo. An epic game coming up Saturday, and it's the Patriots at the Broncos. Like, what the heck? What do you know what epic means? You mean epic, epically bad?
This is not 2015.
No. This is, I mean, the Broncos playing some decent football. They got blown out last time. That's on NFL Network, 7:15 on Sunday. Then there's the three games on Christmas Day. The Raiders at the Chiefs. The Giants are at the Eagles. And then the late game, so there's a three-game window. There's at noon's the Raiders-Chiefs. 3:30 is the Giants and the Eagles. And then the game of the weekend and maybe the game of the NFL season is the Ravens at the Niners, possible Super Bowl preview. Both teams are 11-3. That's on Monday Night Football, Christmas night, 7:15 on ABC and ESPN+. Listen, if you're a Chiefs fan, this is pretty simple. Win. Cowboys win, which is doable. I mean, it could happen. Cowboys could win. They've been horrible on the road, but they could win. I think the Dolphins are going to win, to be honest. But the Cowboys win there. And of course, Dolphins got to go to Baltimore, and then they got Buffalo. So the Dolphins are more likely going to lose at least one. So they don't have to lose to the Cowboys. The Chiefs fans could still sit tight and go, okay, it's all right. The Dolphins still going to lose one somewhere here. Assuming the Chiefs win out, this is what you really need to cheer for if you want the one seed. You need to be really pulling for the 49ers, because if the Ravens beat the 49ers, forget the one seed.
Uh-huh.
Ravens at the Niners, that's a huge, huge game. And, you know, the MVP race is still wide open. Somebody's trying to make a case for Mahomes. I'm sorry, dude. He ain't going to win it every year. He's not going to get it this year. His numbers are actually pretty good. The interceptions are up, but that's because, you know, half of them are dropped by Tony and go into the air. But Mahomes' numbers are actually pretty solid. He leads quarterbacks in yards. He leads this. He's top three in all these categories. And his completion percentage is one of the highest he's ever had. And now imagine if guys would quit dropping the ball, what his completion percentage would be. So, you know, listen, if Kadarius Toney doesn't drop a pass return for a pick six against the Lions, if he doesn't line up offside, the Chiefs are 11-3, and you're probably talking Mahomes as MVP candidate. Seriously, because of your record, and you'd be sitting as a one seed. So sometimes your win-loss record attributes to whether you're the MVP, clearly. But anyway, in regards to the MVP race, people talk about Brock Purdy and the Niners, and then there's Lamar Jackson's kind of making a late run for the Ravens. And I've said that Tyreek Hill should get a lot of consideration, and now he's been banged up, so he's probably not going to get it. If he hit 2,000 yards, I think he should have. Tom Brady put it out there that he would vote for Christian McCaffrey. Now, I'm not one that likes to agree with Tom Brady very much and very often, but I do agree with him on that. Because, and the thing is, Brock Purdy and Christian McCaffrey will take votes away from one another for the MVP. There's a lot of momentum for Dak Prescott. I was never buying that. I was like, they beat up on some bad teams. They had one great game against the Eagles. And then Dak laid a big fat egg, as did the Cowboys against the Bills. So I just can't buy Dak Prescott as the MVP. You know, I can buy Lamar Jackson MVP. I could buy it. Brock Purdy MVP, I have a hard time buying that because he was Mr. Irrelevant. Not that that should matter. A seventh-round draft pick. But I do look at tons of weapons around him, although Mahomes had weapons around him and he's won MVPs. But, you know, when I think of most valuable player, I think, can this team win without that guy? The Ravens are dead in the water without Lamar Jackson. We know this. We've seen this multiple times. I will say the Cowboys are in trouble, although the Cooper Rush played well when Dak was out early last year. So maybe Dak's not as valuable as maybe I think. But, you know, Tyreek Hill is valuable, but the Dolphins just won without him last week. Mahomes, obviously. To me, Mahomes and Josh Allen are two of the most valuable guys in the entire league. And Lamar Jackson. Those three are off the top of my head. I mean, where would the Bills be without Josh Allen? Where would the Chiefs be without Patrick Mahomes? Where would the Ravens be without Lamar Jackson? Those three guys, to me, are just absolutely should be at the top of the list when you're thinking of MVP candidates in regards to how much worse would you be without those guys? Would the Chiefs be serviceable? Yes. Would the Ravens be serviceable? Yes. We saw the Dolphins. I mean, Tua's pretty valuable when he gets knocked out of a game. You take Brock Purdy off the Niners, they're still probably a pretty good team. Now, you take away Christian McCaffrey. We saw what happened. Yeah. McCaffrey's banged up. You know, even Debo Samuel missed some time, and the Niners had a three-game losing streak. To me, Christian McCaffrey is the most valuable player in the league. He's scoring touchdowns every week. He blocks. He runs. He catches. He doesn't drop the ball. Christian McCaffrey, to me, I agree with Tom Brady. It doesn't have to be a quarterback. And if there's ever a year it should go to somebody not a quarterback, it probably should be this year. There is no quarterback lighting the world on fire. There is no quarterback that has these amazing numbers. And if you're going to go at Brock Purdy, I'd say, you know, he's thrown a lot of balls and handed off a lot of footballs to number 23, Christian McCaffrey. My vote would be for Christian McCaffrey right now for MVP.
Here's what I get.
I'll tell you what. The Rams receiver Puka Nacua, he'll be rookie of the year. But I'm not going to sit here and say he's pretty dang valuable to the Rams. Where would they be without him after Cooper Kupp was hurt earlier this year? But that he won't get it. But I'm just making a point that he's pretty dang valuable to the Rams. But I take Christian McCaffrey. Am I missing somebody?
No. Here's the thing I get tired of in the NFL is.
By the way, Joe Burrow's valuable, but look at Jake Browning lighting it up. Maybe Joe Burrow's not as valuable as we think.
Yeah, we get stuck in this thing, and I think it's a crutch and it's an excuse for the NFL that they can use the offensive player of the year to give it to Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah, they did it with Cooper Kupp.
Cooper Kupp 2 years ago should have been the MVP.
I agree.
He had 1,947 yards receiving. Without him on that team, they're not sniffing the Super Bowl championship they got.
No.
They're just not.
No.
And so I just get tired of it, to be honest with you, that it always goes to a quarterback, and that's the only people all the pundits and whoever's talking about, that's all they talk about is a quarterback. And now you get, you know, Christian McCaffrey will be mixed into the conversation because they want to spice it up a little bit. But none of them people actually think he's going to win the MVP probably.
But I think he should.
He's got 1,800 all-purpose yards right now.
Yeah.
There's three games left.
Yeah.
And so it's just like, if you look at what he's done in his entire career, if he's healthy, he's the most valuable player on any team.
He was great with the Panthers until he suddenly got hurt after he got a contract.
Yeah. I mean, he is the most valuable player on the field at all times if he's healthy and playing. And he proves it week in and week out. And it's absurd to me if anybody other than Christian McCaffrey wins MVP.
Yeah.
It really is. Like, and I know he's not going to win it. That's what's sad about it. Some quarterback's going to get it. Like you said, Purdy's going to take away. But Purdy's not even close to some of these quarterbacks that you would call the most valuable for his team.
Let me back up your argument. So Christian McCaffrey this year has 1,292 rushing yards. He's averaging 5.3 yards a carry. He has 13 rushing touchdowns. He has 57 receptions for over 500 yards. He has 7 receiving touchdowns. So he has 20 touchdowns, 1,800 yards combined rushing and receiving. And oh yeah, the last 5 games where the Niners have refound themselves, he's averaging over 6 yards a carry, and he has 4 rushing touchdowns and 3 receiving touchdowns. The guy's a stud, and he always has been in the league.
Yeah.
The only thing that stopped him was the injuries in Carolina. That's it. He had a year at Carolina where you're thinking he could have been MVP. So my vote goes to Christian McCaffrey because Lamar Jackson's numbers aren't nearly as good as they were when he did win MVP. Mahomes' numbers aren't as good, as we know. Interceptions kind of stand out a little bit more this year. Josh Allen, you know, he hasn't done enough. So I'd go Christian McCaffrey. And Brock Purdy, you're sitting here going, well, Brock Purdy's great, but let's sit here and say this. Do we think that every team in the NFL is looking to go get Brock Purdy?
No.
Everybody craves and covets Christian McCaffrey. They covet Josh Allen. They covet Lamar Jackson. You covet Joe Burrow. You covet Patrick Mahomes. Do you covet Brock Purdy? No. He's a really nice quarterback. He's done a great job. And the Niners, that'll probably be the difference between when they didn't win it with Garoppolo and they might win it this year, is Purdy just seems to be the better fit for the offense that they run to Mike Shanahan. I don't want to say he's a system quarterback because he does make some great throws. He's played great. I'm surprised he's been this good after some of the boneheaded plays he made at Iowa State. But make no mistake about it. Anybody that knows football, if you talk to NFL executives and all these other NFL people, they'd tell you Christian McCaffrey's the most valuable player on that offense.
Yeah.
So why do we give it to Purdy?
Nobody listens to this show that votes for MVP, but I would encourage them, people, if you're voting for a 49ers player, take it off of Purdy and give it to McCaffrey.
I agree.
Because he deserves it way more.
Yes. Totally agree with you.
And I just hate that obviously they're going to take votes away from each other, and you don't have to. Just give the vote to Christian.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, you know, maybe Lamar kind of somehow takes it. I'm pulling up here. Purdy has 29 touchdown passes, 7 interceptions. He's thrown for 3,800 yards. Passer rating is 119, and he is completing just under 70% of his passes. That's all pretty good stuff.
Having a great year.
It's MVP worthy. There's no doubt it's MVP worthy. I will give him that. I'll throw out another guy that should be considered for MVP but won't be. Where would the Eagles be without A.J. Brown? A.J. Brown has had a magnificent season. Where would they be? Now, they've lost 3 in a row, but, I mean, if I'm looking at the most important wide receivers in the National Football League, I'm going to look at A.J. Brown's right there. I mean, yeah, I think the Dolphins have more enough weapons to compensate for Hill for an extended period of time, more so than the Eagles do.
Uh-huh.
And Devontae Smith's a nice player, don't get me wrong. Dallas Goedert's a nice tight end, but, you know, they're Jalen Waddle's pretty dang good for the Dolphins as a second wide receiver. Devontae Smith's good, but I don't think as good as Jalen Waddle. Oddly enough, they're both Alabama guys.
Yeah, he's not. He's not as good as Alabama Devontae Smith, obviously, because he lit it up that year. But I agree with you on AJ Brown. He's not going to get any looks for MVP, but I agree with you. He's very, very important to that team.
Of course, another person you would throw in there, MVP, and he'll never get a chance to win it. And, of course, it won't be this year because his numbers are down a little bit. But, listen, we see how important Travis Kelce is. Travis Kelce's a pretty important guy. But and that's the thing. Are we giving it to the guy that had the best year? Are we giving it the most valuable player?
Yeah.
As we've talked about before, LeBron should have won like 10 of them, and Jordan should have won it every year in the league. You know? But I will say, the year that Jordan retired that first time, the Bulls did go out and win 50 games without Michael.
Yeah.
And then Scottie Pippen, to me, should have been the MVP that year.
For sure.
And all the stuff that was on him. But it's a political thing.
Yeah, it's just, and it is where we've gotten. Like, most of the time, a quarterback's going to win the Heisman. Most of the time, a quarterback's going to win the NFL MVP. It's just where we're at.
Well, and the numbers are slid towards a quarterback.
Yeah.
The offensive numbers and everything. And a defensive player has really no chance of winning MVP in either one ever again. The Heisman or or the NFL MVP. They'll just make it defensive player of the year and hide behind that as well. Okay, baseball. The LA Dodgers are spending big money in free agency yet again. Star Japanese pitcher Yoshinobu Yamamoto. I think I got it. Sounded good. 25. He's 25, agreed to terms to join the Dodgers on a 12-year, $325 million deal. Several large market teams are in the running, but Yamamoto chose the Dodgers. It's the longest contract ever for a pitcher. The Dodgers have spent over $1 billion this offseason. They traded and got Tyler Glasnow, gave him $135 million from the Rays, $31 million per year. They gave Ohtani a $700 million contract, although a lot of it is deferred and only going to make technically $2 million a year. Now they gave the guy that's never pitched in the big leagues $325 million, 12-year contract. Is this good for baseball?
You see the absolute absurdity of deferring all that money to make $2 million a year and that being legal?
That should not be allowed. That should not be allowed at all for anybody in any professional sport. It should not be allowed.
It's beyond.
You're circumventing the system, in my opinion, but legally doing it.
That's beyond a no salary cap issue. That's you're pushing it way past that issue.
Yeah.
And imagine if there was no salary cap in the NFL and the Hunts used all their money to pay for whoever the heck they wanted, right? Mm-hmm. They would keep winning Super Bowls. And
Mahomes agreed to defer $890 million of his billion-dollar contract.
He's going to make $75 million a year and then defer $73 million of it.
Yeah,
and it's like,
that's insane.
Wait a second here. Like, how do you do that? Bobby Bonilla now has nothing on Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah, right.
But it's absurd to me. Like, I don't understand how you can do that because they're trying to get away from luxury taxes and going over a threshold or something. And Ohtani, I mean,
he
doesn't need the money, so he agrees to it. And it's like, what are you doing here, man? Like, let's get this thing right and fix the problem in baseball.
Well,
you didn't fix anything. And now you went and got the most coveted Japanese pitcher, too.
Clover, of course, is funny coming from a Yankee fan, so it's pretty rich, and that's why he probably sent it. He puts capital letters, Evil Empire Dodgers, they are bad for the game. I said, yeah, that and no salary cap is bad for baseball. Major League Baseball could learn a thing or two from the NFL, and of course, the Yankees are the kings of overpaying people and not worrying anything about the guy sucking and then having to pay the contract anyway. The Royals can't do that. The Twins can't do that. The A's can't do that. The Rays can't do that. Major League Baseball. That's why Major League Baseball have a hard time buying into Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball could learn from the National Football League. One of the biggest problems Major League Baseball has, and it's actually a great thing for the players. It's a great thing for the players, but but it's horrible for fans across baseball, in my opinion. And that is the union. They have one of the strongest unions in the entire world. How they became so strong, I don't fully know. But it would behoove that union to go, you know what, there probably would be more money for everybody, and we'd have more options, and there'd be more people, more suitors for our best players, so where the bidding could even maybe go even higher if you had more people involved. Of course, all it takes is two to bid against one another, and our players will still get their money, and then we'll have, there'll be more parity in Major League Baseball. And the National Football League, you look at, you got teams that go from worst to first quite often in the National Football League. You got teams that are really good that go backwards after 1 year. You see the up and downs, and there's the Chiefs are kind of the abnormality right now, obviously, making the AFC title game five straight years. But what would the Chiefs be like if they had Major League Baseball system? Mahomes would already be, right now, Mahomes would be about to be a free agent is what would be happening.
Yeah.
And you'd have, and the Chiefs would have no chance to re-sign him. And I think it's pathetic and sad that you can develop your players, and you can draft and do a great job, develop him, and then Bobby Witt Jr. could go sign for $500 million somewhere else, and the Royals can only offer him $300 million. And, I mean, that's just not the way the sport should be. I don't think professional sports should be that way. I don't think the rich should get richer. And Major League Baseball is completely towards the rich get richer. The Dodgers have spent over $1 billion on three players, and technically two, and then $135 million on a guy they traded for. And you know what's going to be really sweet? It's watching the Dodgers get their ass kicked in the playoffs, because I'm looking forward to it. Because they think they can buy themselves a championship. And you know what? Sometimes here's the thing that people miss. I hear this argument. Well, the Yankees spent a whole bunch of money. When's the last time they won a World Series? And the Dodgers spent a lot of money, but you know they flamed out the last couple years. And this team spent a lot of money, and they didn't win the World Series. And here's what I say. Here's my comeback. What was their record? Did they make the playoffs? Oh, yeah. Do they make the playoffs almost all the time? Yeah. So they don't have to worry about rebuilding, do they? They can just go ahead and buy players, so they can skip the roller coaster that the Royals and the A's and the Rays and Twins and other small market teams go through, right? Like those small market teams have a window where they can actually go for it. The Yankees' window is open every year as long as their checkbook's open. The Dodgers' window is open every year as long as they're willing to write a big fat check. And that's the problem. That's the problem. It's not about who's winning these championships, okay? The Dodgers are in the playoffs every year. There's never a doubt. The Yankees are in the playoffs virtually every year. And I know the Yankees didn't make the playoffs last year. Here's the thing. Did the Yankees go 56-106 last year?
No.
They were 81-81, I believe. In a bad year, the Yankees still don't even have a losing record. That's the problem with the system, is that you got the teams that have to go bad for 5 years and almost have to purposely tank to have any chance. And they still got to develop the players. And now they changed the whole drafting with this lottery that just punishes those teams. Like, we got to cut down on this. We can't have these teams tanking because that's a major problem in baseball. You don't think a major problem in baseball is only two teams able to afford a guy from Japan? You don't see that being a problem?
Yeah.
You don't see that being a problem. That you don't see deferring $698 million of $700 million in money? You don't think that's a problem? That's a gigantic problem. And that's why Major League Baseball is the little brother or little sister to the National Football League. That Major League Baseball could actually learn something from the National Football League. But Major League Baseball is usually reactive instead of proactive. Now, they've been a little bit more proactive. I like the rules changes, this and that. And baseball still gets decent ratings. But they're nowhere close. Nowhere close to the National Football League. And honestly, nobody really is right now. But I am so sick and tired of, listen, you don't even need to pay people on ESPN and Fox and FS1 to break down when Shohei Ohtani is a free agent. Who are the top suitors for Ohtani? It's the same damn teams every dang time. Same thing for this Japanese pitcher that they just signed. It's very simple. It's the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Dodgers. Start with those three. You're always going to have two or three suitors. Juan Soto. Where's Juan Soto going to go? You know, my sources tell me, my sources tell me that Shohei Ohtani and Juan Soto, that the Yankees, the Dodgers, and the Red Sox are in on. That's weird. Those are the exact same three teams for both guys. How can they possibly have money to sign both? Oh, wait a minute. They're the only three markets that can.
Yeah.
Right? It's ridiculous. I mean, the Royals fans, if you actually had, If you, like, for instance, T. Higgins is going to be a free agent for the Bengals. Okay, there are people saying the Chiefs should go after T. Higgins, give him a contract, bring him in. And I say that's a mistake because then you got to lose other players you can't sign. Whatever. The Chiefs can get a free agent. They need to trade for a guy. They can draft a receiver. I don't think they got to break the bank to fix their receiving situation. That's just my opinion. But here's the point. The Chiefs could do it. With the way the NFL is, the Chiefs could do that. Now imagine T. Higgins being a free agent in baseball. The Chiefs would have no chance to make their team better. They have to go get what? The guy that's coming off knee surgery, that's a former first-round pick that has nowhere to go, or give him a two-year contract with the player opt-in, which we just talked with Sir Petra the other day, 810 WHB in Kansas City, that the Royals, the reason they got some of these players they signed, they got a couple nice free agent starting pitchers, and they picked up Hunter Renfro, which might be a good signing, who knows, whatever. But they're all, these are short-term hires. These are short-term contracts. Well, where the problem is with these short-term contracts, and the Royals have to do this, the Yankees don't have to do it. The Dodgers don't have to do it, okay? The Red Sox don't have to do it. The Cubs probably don't have to do it. The Royals have to do it. To attract somebody to their team, they have to make it a one-year deal with an opt-out, and the player has to opt in for the second. Well, here's the thing. If Michael Wacha goes out next year and sucks, he's going to obviously not going to get a lot on the open market, right? So he's going to opt in, and the Royals got to pay him $16 million his second year after coming off a bad season. So the Royals are, so in that way, it's not a good deal for the Royals. And then if Wacha is terrific and wins the Cy Young, he'll opt out and the Royals don't have him anymore because they gave him and other players an opt out in year two or three. So that's what the Royals have to do to get somebody to come to Kansas City is give them that flexibility. So the player's like, wow, let me get this right. If I stink, I can trigger an opt in and get $16 million. So I know I got that in my back pocket if I want it, because it's a player option, not a team option. It's not a mutual option. And if I'm awesome, I can say, bon voyage, J.J. Piccolo, and go sign with the Dodgers, and they'll give me $1 billion. So it's just a messed up system, and I'm so sick of baseball. It's been this way for many, many years. It's why what the Royals did in 14 and 15 is why I never thought it would ever happen, is because of the way the baseball's set up, and the rich get richer. They have the luxury tax, and yes, a lot of, you know, but these teams don't care about the luxury tax anymore. That or they'll find ways around it now. And baseball needs a salary cap. There's no doubt, but the union will never allow it. So baseball will continue to be what they are, and that is second or third or fourth fiddle to other professional sports.
Yeah. It's
because, yes, it's great for L.A. and all the people in L.A. It's great for Ohtani. It's great for these big-time players to get all this money. I get it. It's not good for the game of baseball across the board. I don't think it is. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think it is. Royals fans have no chance. No chance. They know there's no chance to go get a top-flight free agent. They have to always go on the middle level and shop at the they have to shop at the bargain bin on sale basket.
Yeah, it's and
while the Yankees and Dodgers are shopping for Rolls Royces, the Royals are looking for a Ford Pinto.
Yeah,
that's going to work again.
It's so like frustrating as a fan of the Chiefs and Royals both when you're talking about this, because you do. You have that hope. You're just like, hey, lock Mahomes in for however long you can.
Which you can do with the way it's set up, and you know for the next 10 years the Chiefs are fine at quarterback.
Yeah, and so I'm like, okay, there's a young generational talent. Hey, we need to lock Bobby Witt Jr. in while we can, right? You can't pay him the money because there's no cap.
And you understand why Mahomes would lock in. Why Bobby Witt Jr. wouldn't.
Yeah, and everybody, there's people who are like, maybe we should try to lock him in a little early before his contract's up. Well, that is stupid for Bobby Witt Jr. to do that.
I think so.
And it was stupid for Salvador Perez to do it so many times, I thought. But Salvi was, I guess, a different cat. He just wanted to stay here. He could have made more money going somewhere else instead of signing early contracts. And so it's, you know, each player is going to be a little bit different there, but you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see Bobby go play for the Rangers, right?
Yeah, right.
Like that's a big market team that can sign him, and so you know, you don't do that if you're in those shoes in baseball, because you know you have an opportunity if you continue to play the way you are and you continue to progress. When in football, it doesn't matter. Like if you want to lock this guy in, you have that opportunity to do so.
You can also tag him.
Tag him exactly, and if they like the city that they're in, they're going to be more apt and willing to do that like a Patrick Mahomes, and you know, the system and everything that goes along with that, it goes a long way to getting those guys locked up. There's some quarterbacks that won't do that, maybe because they don't like the situation, don't want to stay there. But if you have the perfect situation, it's feasible in all aspects in the NFL, and it's just not in Major League Baseball. And so it's like, it's crazy watching that. I'm tired of – we've been dealing with it since Johnny Damon and Carlos Beltran. I'm tired – for me anyway, I'm tired of seeing all this unbelievable talent, and it's just gone because you can't keep them because there's no regulation.
The only teams that will ever be able to have a player like George Brett or Cal Ripken Jr. again – is the Yankees and the Dodgers and maybe the Red Sox.
Yeah.
You know, Derek Jeter, he stayed with it. That's so special. He played his whole career with the Yankees. I'm like, well, why would he have gone anywhere else? That's where he could make the most money, and they were going to take care of most of the time. And I mean, hell, and the best chance to win championships was in New York. Why would he have left? You know, if Derek Jeter was a Kansas City Royal and the exact same situation happened, except he was in Kansas City instead of New York, he wouldn't have played 20 years in Kansas City. If George Brett was in the modern day world of baseball, he wouldn't have never played more than 5 years in Kansas City.
Yeah.
And Cal Ripken Jr. would have never played his full career in Baltimore. You know, it's so, you know, the only guys that are going to play the whole career for 10, 15, 20 years in baseball the rest of the way is going to be either a Yankee, a Red Sox, or a Dodger. And I would say that's unlikely as well. For probably even the Dodgers and the Red Sox. I think the Yankees are about the only one.
That's the thing. If they want you to stick around, there's no reason for you to leave.
Right,
like
exactly.
If they're not going to get rid of you.
Unless you want to grow your hair long.
Clayton Kershaw would be that for the Dodgers, right? Like, he's just been there, and he's just there. You know,
he's a free agent, by the way, right now.
Yeah, and all those teams that were winning all those championships for the Yankees, and Derek Jeter was part of that, right? Like Jorge Posada, you know,
Bernie
like
Williams.
Mariano Rivera, Bernie Williams, like all these guys were Yankee lifers, right?
Right.
But why would you go anywhere else when you're winning
exactly.
and they're paying you the max amount of dollars to win? And it's like
the Yankees always
no
take care of their players. Well, of course they're going
to
take care of the players. They got unlimited resources and they're winning championships. See, they don't have to worry about breaking up their team. But the Royals, you know, if they had the same type of Yankee team they had and when they won it all in 15, the Royals had no chance of going in 16 and 17 and making a run, right?
Yeah. I mean, if the Royals are the Yankees, Eric Hosmer, Mike Moustakas,
Alcides
Escobar, Lorenzo Cain, none of them are going anywhere.
Right.
And so they're sticking around and they're going to be Royal lifers. What a way to go out. Just be a Royal lifer and you don't have to worry about anything.
Yeah.
You know, Salvi's one of those that did that. Mike Sweeney did it, right? There's some guys that do it, but they're few and far between when we're talking about these kinds of talent.
I would say post Salvi. Salvi might be the last one. A small market team that lasts so many years with the same franchise. And there's been some talk that he still may get traded this offseason. I don't think it'll happen. Sports Ticket brought to you by Kiefer Brothers Automotive and Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair. Major League Baseball Committee approved some changes for the upcoming 2024 baseball season. 18-second clock with runners on instead of 20. Okay, we'll speed it up even more.
I'm for it.
I have no problem with it. 4 mound visits instead of 5. I'm all for that as well. If a pitcher starts to warm up before an inning, he must face at least one hitter. I'm okay with that. I think the pitcher would be too. The runner's lane, the first, has been widened to the infield grass, which is probably a good change. And all the other changes they had last year are still going to be in play. So at least baseball got that part right. The Detroit Pistons had everything aligned for them to break their 24-game winning streak last night. They were playing at home against a Utah Jazz team that was on the second night of a back-to-back. And the Jazz have a 10-18 record, and the Jazz were playing without 4 of their top players. So naturally, the Pistons still lost. 119-111. The Pistons now have lost 25 games in a row, one shy of the single-season league record for the longest losing streak set by the Sixers and the Cavs. It's 2 losses away from the all-time mark set by the Sixers, who lost apparently 27 games in a row over the course of 2 seasons. They were yelling last night to fans, sell the team during the game. They've got some talent. Monty Williams is their coach.
It's kind of weird.
It's weird.
Just how bad they are.
They shot 50% from the floor last night. They had 4 guys score over 20, including Cade Cunningham, and they still lost, but they had 20-some turnovers.
Yeah, well, that's not good in the NBA.
No, that's really bad.
That's not good at any level.
20 turnovers in the NBA is like 40 in high school.
Yeah.
NBA doesn't have lots of turnovers. Okay, and we end with this. Florida State has called a special Board of Trustees meeting for this morning, which there's more information about that. Multiple reports indicate Florida State's athletic future in the ACC will be discussed. The board could approve a legal filing against the ACC, which would be the first true step in trying to break the so-called ironclad grant of rights that tethers its members through 2036. Several ACC members have spent the past year examining the conference's grant of rights, though Florida State has been its most vocal critic. Florida State is a mere few weeks removed from becoming the first undefeated power conference championship team to be left out of the college football playoff. And the decision has incensed officials around the state of Florida. However, the playoff will expand to 12, so next year, if you're undefeated in Power 5, you should obviously be in. But still, the university has publicly acknowledged its desire to explore options outside of the ACC in previous public settings. Back in August, Florida State President Richard McCullough presented to the trustees the challenges of staying in the ACC while the ACC falls as much as $30 million per year behind in payouts behind the SEC and the Big Ten. Remember in August, Florida State trustee Drew Weatherford said, "It's not a matter of if we leave the ACC, it's a matter of how and when we leave." The ACC has attempted to be aggressive in finding further compensation for its top members, which is Florida State and Clemson. In May, the league introduced success incentives, allowing schools with postseason success to receive a larger piece of the distribution. The new plan would have greatly benefited Florida State had it made the college football playoff, as it would have kept a large chunk of that playoff money. But oddly enough, they didn't get in. Challenges of leaving. ACC has the longest TV contract and granted rights of any FBS conference, having signed a 20-year agreement with, guess who, ESPN in 2016. At least seven ACC schools have looked at the procedures for breaking the grant of rights, but have ultimately opted to stay put after investigating the details. Now for information coming out of this meeting today. Florida State's outside legal counsel says that ESPN gave the ACC an ultimatum in 2016. Either extend the grant of rights through 2036, or there will be no further media agreements made with the league, including creating its own network. So basically, it was, you're going to do it our way, or we're not going to give you a TV deal. What do you know? ESPN was so much power. Florida State Trustees Chairman Peter Collins, "Today we reached a crossroad in our relationship with the ACC. I believe this board has been left no choice but to challenge the legitimacy of the ACC grant of rights and its severe withdrawal penalties." New information per Florida State, ESPN is not guaranteed to pay ACC members revenue past 2027, but the ACC schools are locked into a grant of rights that runs through 2036. I said it when it happened. And I know Gottlieb's comes what we do. You do know this is silly because ESPN also has the rights to the ACC. Which conference is a bigger deal? It's not even close. SEC. Yes. And ESPN just got a new deal with the SEC. The ESPN will benefit if the ACC falls apart. Because you know what? Then you're going to have these teams are going to be picked up by the SEC possibly, the Big Ten, maybe the Big 12. You're going to get to what I think the TV networks want. And that is three or four or even two super, super big, huge conferences, or simply get it down to 64 teams are only eligible to play for a Division I championship. That's it. You're going to have your Power 5 schools from whatever remaining two, three, four conferences you have. Okay? The ACC loses Clemson. Florida State's out the door. Clemson's out the door. Now what do you do? What do you do if we're Stanford that just is now coming in with the ACC? They were in the Pac-12. And now you sit here and you're like, well, where does Florida State go? The SEC is what you would think geographically, but Florida's going to fight that tooth and nail. The Big Ten would make some sense because they don't. They have Maryland, but they don't have anybody down that way. The Big Ten would make sense for Florida State, but of course you got the whole travel thing, which nobody seems to care about anymore.
It doesn't matter anymore.
The Big 12 has the next longest deal locked in, so Florida State's not happy with the ACC deal. They ain't going to be happy going to the Big 12. So there's not a lot of suitors available. We're back to Major League Baseball. You got to choose between the Dodgers or the Yankees, but they'll both give you a lot of money as long as they both want you. The question is, does the SEC and the Big Ten want Florida State? And if they do, then there'll be a battle for Florida State and then Clemson and then whoever else will be poached. Here's what I think may happen. I think the Big Ten, well, how many teams in the Big Ten now? I can't keep track. Is it 18? I don't remember. Anyway, they talked a long time ago about there's going to be four 16-team conferences or four 20-team conferences, and one conference would fall apart. People thought the Big 12 would be that conference. Of course, instead, it's the Pac-12. But now the ACC, if you lose Clemson and Florida State, because Florida State's out the door, then I think Clemson's out the door. Clemson would make sense in the SEC completely to me. Florida State may go Big Ten, whatever. But these top schools in the ACC, my point is, they're not going to go to the Big 12. So what you're going to end up having here is, so where does North Carolina and Duke go? Right? Okay, yeah. Well, if you're Big 12, you're like, well, basketball, that'd be amazing, right? Well, we already got 16 next year. So now we got problems with the scheduling situation, as we know. So let's say that the Big 12 hypothetically says, you know what, we'll take Duke and North Carolina. Not great football programs, but we can do something with basketball. You know, that's middle of the road. We can't bring in Clemson or Florida State. They want too much money. Okay, fine. What about Notre Dame? Notre Dame's tied with the ACC, but they're not a full-fledged member of the ACC. So now Notre Dame, don't they have to eventually pick a conference here at some point?
Yeah.
So are they going to go Big 12? Hell no. They're going to go...
The natural for Notre Dame, I think, is Big Ten.
Right. So we're getting to the point where there's only so many musical chairs to sit in. And so, guess what? Vanderbilt, good luck. Congrats.
Yeah.
NC State, I don't know. What are you going to do? I mean, Boston College, what are you going to do? Pitt, what are you going to do? You know, see, if you looked at the ACC members right now, and I'm going to pull this up real quick. ACC members. Come on, where is it at? Okay, so here's the ACC members. You tell me, if the ACC falls apart, all right, the ACC falls apart. See, I don't like that one. That's not. Let me try this again. ACC divisions. There we go. We'll go here. We'll just go in the football standings or whatever. That ain't right either. They gave me the AAC. Thanks. I said ACC, okay, for crying out loud. There we go. Pull it up. My apologies. Okay, so if the ACC loses Clemson and Florida State, do they still survive as a conference? Maybe. I mean, the Big 12 did. Big 12 didn't have Oklahoma, Texas. Yeah. They're surviving, right? But that what we get to then is you're going to have the Big 10, the SEC, the super heavyweights.
Yeah.
You're going to then have the occasional contender, and that will be, to use a boxing analogy, that would be the Big 12 and maybe the ACC. But if you're the ACC and you sit here and you see Florida State leave, and then Clemson's probably right behind them, here's our remaining schools. Where does Louisville go? If I'm the Big 12, I'm like, yeah, that sounds good. We should have taken them when we had a chance last time. Where's NC State go?
There are going to be some schools that are going to be left in the cold.
Exactly.
And NC State, I think, would be one of them, probably.
I think Georgia Tech would be left out in the cold.
Yeah.
I think Virginia Tech would be left out in the cold. I think Clemson and Florida State are fine. They'll find homes. I think North Carolina Duke can find homes thanks to their basketball.
Yeah.
Miami's a brand name yet. What about Miami? Where are they going? Don't you think they're probably going with, they might be SEC?
I would think that.
Big Ten, maybe?
I wouldn't be surprised, really, if Miami just shows up where Florida State goes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like I agree with you.
Kind of the same type of deal.
I agree with you. Boston College, where the heck are they going to go? Big 12?
Big Ten would make sense, you know, with some of the other spots.
But they're not going to want them.
Yeah.
Syracuse,
I think, is another Virginia Tech, Oregon State.
Pitt.
Maybe left out. Pitt could easily be in the Big 12.
Yep.
You could renew that West Virginia Pitt rivalry.
And Virginia could be a Big 12 team.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Wake Forest.
And I think Wake would be left out.
I agree. So they're going to have to, if Florida State and Clemson leave, and if it's Florida State that leaves, the ACC still got problems, even if Clemson stays. So now you have two inferior. I mean, think about it. You have two inferior conferences. You have the Big 12 that has no OU or Texas. And no offense to KU fans out there, but if KU is one of the favorites to win the Big 12 next year in football, that tells you something. Sorry.
Yeah.
It does. Because if OU and Texas are in this league next year, there's no way people are talking about Kansas winning the Big 12. They're talking about Kansas maybe be in the top three, but they're not saying they're a favorite with Colorado that some people have talked about next year. I mean, it's wide open in the Big 12, as we know, with OU and Texas leaving. Whereas the SEC has all the heavyweights, the Big Ten have the heavyweights, the Pac-12 is falling apart. The ACC is going to have to be like the Big 12 stepbrother,
Yeah, and here's
or they dissolve, and if that happens, then what? Where does that leave the Big 12? Because now you're going to be. I mean, you add Florida State and Clemson. Let's say Clemson goes to SEC, Florida State, Miami go to the Big Ten, and who knows what else? But those are the top names, I would say. Miami could go to the Big Ten, whatever. The top brands of ACC are gone already. So you get what? The leftovers. Kind of like the Royals in baseball get the leftovers of free agency. The Big 12 would get the leftovers, possibly. But you're not going to get the same TV deal. If we're already talking about how the ACC gets $30 million less per year than the Big 10 and the SEC, and that's why Florida State wants to leave, which I do understand the economics of it, then why is anybody going to want to join the Big 12 other than just to simply stay alive and survive? And what is ESPN really going to value, or whoever the network is, a Big 12 with 20 schools with no blue blood at all? I mean, basketball, but we know football runs the bus. I think this is bad news for the Big 12, to be quite frank.
Yeah, it's not great. The Big 12, they were proactive in putting all this together, getting those Pac-12 schools like Arizona State, Utah, you know, and Colorado coming back. But here's your... When you went through that whole ACC team, you're also still leaving out California and Stanford, right?
Right.
Like, because they're coming in next year. I'm going to tell you what really the ACC needs to be looking into immediately is, okay, we've got Cal Stanford. Our first thing we need to do is try to wrap these people and keep them in once Florida State and Clemson leave. We got to try to keep this thing together. And now what you're doing is it – and it's kind of like what the Big 12 did, right? It's going to be kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. It's not going to put you in a much better position. But you are now saying Oregon State, Washington State, join our league. Because we need as many names in this conference as we can to keep it alive. Now, if you don't do that, then if you can't keep it alive, you know, Duke and Carolina say they go to the Big 12 because they want to be in a basketball conference.
Yeah.
Now you're in a really tough position, and you're starting to see everybody leave. And then you really probably should go after Oregon State and Washington State if you want to keep them in, because you've already got Cal and Stanford there. If you want to keep them, get a couple more West Coast teams, keep them in, and try to salvage what you have left of the conference, right? And I think that's kind of what the Big 12 did, right? They were trying to find other teams that could fill in these voids. They knew they weren't going to fill them in with the talented football programs that they have and the money that's going to come in, but...
Looking at TV markets.
You got to do it. You got to try your hardest. And some of the markets aren't going to be great TV wise. But if you can keep teams in and you can keep your conference alive, that's going to at least expand it a little bit longer for some of these schools that want to be a part of this.
Because not everybody can join the SEC and the Big Ten.
Exactly.
You know, there's got to be
so
a limit.
Many teams in the ACC, they're not going to, and the Big 12 is not going to take all of them either, right?
No.
And so now, your first thing right now, if I'm the ACC, I'm at least talking to Washington State and Oregon State to see if they want to be a part of this. If in fact Florida State's gone,
yeah. Which the Oregon State and Washington State, they just agreed to do something with the West Coast Conference for some scheduling next year or two, but they're not becoming full fledged members of that conference. And so, you know, we talked about it last time that the musical carousel of conference realignment, it's still going to continue even after all the stuff that happened with Arizona State, Utah, Colorado, and then Oregon and Washington and so forth and so on. Excuse me. Florida State believes it would cost them. Am I reading this right? Florida State believes it would cost them $572 million to get out of the ACC.
I figured it was probably at least half a billion.
Wow.
Yeah, just basically, you know, based on it goes down each year you get closer to the expiration as far as the buyout.
Yeah. And by the way, you know, the Big 12, I think these conferences don't want to go more than 20. So the Big 12 has 16 next year. So you only have four spots.
Mm-hmm.
So if the ACC, you know, they're not interested in Washington State or Oregon State, clearly. And so, you know, then who would you want out of the ACC if you're the Big 12? You know, Louisville maybe? Clearly you would take Clemson or Florida State or Miami, but that ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
So you're going to have what? Louisville, Carolina, Duke, and who would be your fourth one?
Pitt? I think for the West Virginia part of it.
Pitt or Virginia?
And if you have Louisville and Cincinnati already, you know, in your conference, I think Pitt's the next fit after those three teams. I
don't know the financial impact, though.
Yeah, and that's not going to – I don't know that any of these teams are going to have a big financial impact.
No,
it's just keeping the conference alive.
I agree.
And that's why I'm saying the ACC, if you want to keep it alive, talk to anybody that you can to get it and keep it going.
Right.
And if in fact Florida State leaves and then Clemson and Miami would follow, so – I hate it. I don't like the situation. But, yeah, if I'm the Big 12, I'm absolutely going after Louisville, North Carolina, and Duke, because we sit here and
I'll get you at 19
and then
one more.
And then, you know, get Pitt. And, you know, they are in conversations, I think, clearly with Gonzaga to possibly be just a basketball member.
Well, that's true.
You would have an unreal basketball conference.
You really would.
Like, it would be absurd how many power hitters are in that conference. With Arizona already coming in, you'd add Duke and North Carolina and possibly Gonzaga. Pitt's not ever, like, a terrible basketball team. They've had some really good teams in the past. And so Louisville obviously has had some good teams in the past. It's like,
and football made the SEC title.
Yeah, and so
Louisville,
you still are bringing in, I think, important power hitters in college sports.
Yeah.
If you bring those in, they're not going to be Florida State or Clemson or Miami. And I
just
get
like
that.
OU and Texas.
But also, yeah, Arizona State and Colorado are not OU and Texas. Utah's not. Arizona's not. But Utah has had a lot of good basketball teams as well. So that would absolutely be the best basketball conference in the country if they would do everything that we're talking about.
Florida State Board of Trustees have voted unanimously this morning to file the lawsuit against the ACC challenging its withdrawal penalties. So now you're going to get the lawyers are going to make the lawyers going to make the most money.
Not hard to see that coming.
Right. By the way, back to the baseball thing in regards to the Dodgers real quick. They've spent $700 million on Shohei Ohtani, $325 million for this new Japanese pitcher on a 12-year deal, $136.5 million for Tyler Glasnow. They have a $325 million contract with Mookie Betts, and a $165 million contract with Freddie Freeman. So that's $1 billion. That's over $1.5 billion tied up in five players. But, yeah, everything's great.
No problem in baseball. No,
baseball's got it all figured out like they so often don't.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.
Merry Christmas to everybody out there. Happy holidays. Dusty wearing his Santa hat and his holiday sweater.
Yes,
this is when we need the webcam in the studio like we talked about recently.
This one, if I shake it hard enough, it actually lights up, but I think it's dying. But this is a Christmas vacation ugly sweater. It's the only ugly sweater I have. Saw it at a discount store and I'm like, yeah, definitely buying that.
My 10-year-old just saw National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation the other day for the first time. He said, this is a dumb movie. I said, that's what makes it great.
Absolutely. And you just watch it over and over again.
Cousin Eddie, man. Cousin Eddie. It's great stuff. Great stuff. But we hope everybody has a joyous and holiday season. Remember the reason for the season, of course. And I hope everybody has safe travels wherever you may go. And we look forward to talking again coming up on December 27th. We'll have Monday and Tuesday off, and then next thing you know, we'll be turning the calendar into 2024. Big thank you to Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit, sponsor of the Sports Ticket.